Episode 11, next stop, Tomorrowland. Mind the story gaps.
Showbiz veterans and new media entrepreneurs, Sean Apple, PJ Foley, and Ephraim Patel.
All right, welcome to our next episode.
10 giant robots.
10 giant robots.
You know, if you listen carefully, there's only 9.
Easter egg for the fans.
For the fans.
Today we're going to talk about Tomorrowland, and to sort of set this up a little bit, kind of contextually, I just realized that I guess Disney also owns the Muppet franchise. Is that true?
I think they own everything now.
It's everything. It's Marvel. It's Pixar.
It's Star Wars.
Disney. What property do they not own right now?
I think
now?
They own Jesus at this
point.
Yeah, they own the Bible.
Yeah, nice. Huh. Nice. Yep. I got an option on it.
They're turning it into a video game, TV series, web franchise.
Right. First person savior.
Multimedia CD-ROM.
Save them up.
All right, so finally the three of us were able to catch Tomorrowland, Brad Bird's latest offering.
And, the question occurs to me right now, why Tomorrowland? Why are we talking about Tomorrowland exactly? There are all these other movies out there. Honestly, we wanted to all see a film and talk about it. And Tomorrowland seemed like a good offering.
And also, it got us all riled up. So I don't know if that's an accurate assumption, but we're about to find out.
I did plan on ignoring it. It didn't seem like my cup of cake.
Brad Bird. I mean, love Brad Bird, right?
For sure. The trailers were underwhelming, I thought.
That's what changed my mind was I got to see the laser 3D IMAX, and they did a special presentation. It was almost like the 3-minute cut. It wasn't every single shot, but it was the scene from the girl trying to get into the house to the FBI Men in Black robots.
The robots, yeah, which was a cool scene.
Very cool scene.
I saw that same featurette at the man's Chinese laser IMAX theater thing that you told me to go see.
Yes.
And so I got to see that. I had seen the trailers, and the trailers were intriguing, where she touches the pin and suddenly she's there. I'm like, oh, that was done really well. Like, visually, it was very intriguing. And I think I kind of felt like I imagined the character felt, oh, this looks exciting. I want to go to there.
Right. And there is no there.
Turns out there is no there.
I would like to say that I did not see some super sexy 3-minute laser projected on the moon. I saw some janky ass shit on YouTube. I'm joking. I didn't see that.
Oh, like everyone else. Yeah.
I know, right? It wasn't special. No. So here's the thing. It had, even with the trailers, I'm being a little overly harsh because I love Disneyland and Disney World. I love the Tomorrowland thing. I love Space Mountain. I love Epcot Center. I love that whole concept. So conceptually, I was like, this could be my favorite movie. It has the potential. It's like, because for me, the thing that was always exciting about the idea of Tomorrowland is it's what's going to happen in the future and traveling to Mars and like very forward looking, very sci-fi, very sort of, the future, things with the future.
Is this the first major live action offering from Brad Bird as a director?
No. Didn't he do one of the Mission Impossibles?
You're absolutely right.
And it was great.
He did the third one. Yeah. Ghost Protocol.
Fourth one. When the fourth one? I think because wasn't Woo the
I
second
that
one?
You're right.
Fourth.
You're right. J.J. Abrams was the third. Brad Bird was the fourth with Ghost Protocol.
And John Woo was the second one?
He was the second one.
And the first one was?
Whoever did the first one.
Cecil B. DeMille?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And and I really enjoyed that. So I'm definitely a Brad Bird fan.
I am too.
Iron Giant, The Incredibles. I really enjoyed Ratatouille.
Yeah, right.
I think it had some issues, but I don't think that was Brad Bird's fault. I think he did a masterful job.
That movie too, won't sidetrack too much, but Ratatouille was the first time I was like, this movie is gorgeous.
Oh my God, it was beautiful.
I mean, it was like, yeah, I mean, and the whole French, getting that whole vibe on screen, I was like, and the this, you know, the vistas of Paris was
and
like,
the food, everything.
It was great.
It was, yeah, gorgeous. So the man knows how to get talented people and craftsmen and artists together to put together an amazing vision.
Right. So what went wrong?
I don't know where to begin.
On page one, now, paragraph three.
I'm sure there are a lot of people who I know who would say, yeah, but I liked Tomorrowland. It was fun. It delivered on, you know, the
what did it deliver on? That's my problem.
It delivered on the images of Tomorrowland.
But I never got the experience of going into Tomorrowland and seeing the future. Like, I'll give you, here's Harry Potter, when you first go into, what's the, with where all the
Hogwarts.
Not even that, no. Although that was fantastic. But what's the village where you get your first magic wand and you know that whole...
Oh, yeah.
Where you go...
Pre-Hogwarts.
Right, whatever that... whatever
Diagon Alley or something?
Might be. Yeah. I'm not a Harry Potter guy, but that delivered on that premise. Yeah. You got, ooh, what's this cool magic shop? Oh, what's this place over here? Oh, you know, you got... You were fully immersed into the experience of once you go through that... 9.5 or whatever, 8.5. One of those is a Fellini film. The other one is has Mickey Rourke in them. It's whatever the half train station was that actually takes you into whatever.
Right.
I felt like that actually delivered on that premise, you know? Whereas Tomorrowland, I still don't know what the future looks like. It looks like a jetpack gone awry.
And here's the thing. Today, in preparation for doing this podcast, I realized I've seen the film once, and I realized, okay, most of the movie... they intentionally don't tell you what's going on. There's lots of questions or cryptic answers, oftentimes non-answers. It's a shell game of information.
Was one of the writers by chance...
One of the writers... Okay, this was written by Brad Bird and Damon Lindelof.
Who's the second guy?
Damon Lindelof.
Mm. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I can't tell you his entire career, but one of the things he's famous for is J.J. Abrams' Lost.
Right.
He also, I think, was a writer or the writer on Prometheus.
Right.
And I want to say he was one of the writers on Cowboys versus Aliens.
Mm.
Well, he seems to, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to possibly be wrong here. You know, hey, it's okay to be wrong, even on a podcast. So he seems, though, to me, to have sort of invested in this idea that J.J. Abrams has talked about. The mystery box.
He did a TED talk on
it. He did a TED talk on the mystery box. If you want to find out more about JJ's mystery box, you can search for that on TED. And the idea, as I understand it, of the mystery box is you have a box that is a mystery. You don't know what's in it. And it is so intriguing for the audience, and that there is wonder and magic and whimsy and all those wonderful things that we love and enjoy in movies are somehow... emanating from the box, and it's unclear whether or not JJ intends to ever open the box, or maybe it is open, but in looking at the execution of the mystery box approach, it seems like the approach is tease a really interesting thing, but never explain it, never really let, you know, just you deliver just a little crumb to keep someone interested. Just at the point where the audience should be getting frustrated that they're not finding out any useful information, you give them just another little thing that puts a spin on it that, oh, wait, oh, maybe it's this other thing, which I didn't watch Lost, but apparently that was the experience of that entire show.
And it at some point, it ran out of steam.
Right, and the complaint I heard from everyone was the ending was like, well, they explained all this stuff and it didn't make any sense, or it was unsatisfying. I think that's...
It was whatever. You know, Bobby Ewing was asleep. Oh, holy shit, am I old. But basically, it was like it was all a dream kind of thing.
It was all a dream in heaven in another universe.
I would like to briefly break down the psychology of the magic box.
Okay, please
And
do.
Why it is a bullshit hipster device.
Whoa.
Right? Oh. I'm throwing down
okay,
now.
Okay, just to be clear, this is Sean Apple. Talking.
Here's why I think...
Put down your beards, hipsters.
That's right, and your Pabst Blue Ribbon.
And listen.
So, I think when you're making a movie has presumably a point, you know? And it doesn't have to be a heavy point, it can be a comedy or whatever, but you have to end somewhere, you have to land on something. And that is a risk. And anytime you have a MacGuffin, which is what the black box concept is, you know, and you actually want the MacGuffin to be more than just a trading device, you know, like it's like in Hitchcock, you rarely, the MacGuffin was almost irrelevant.
It was like, we have to find the microfilm. But, right. You know, it never really means anything.
It was a baton that got passed
in the marathon. Everyone wants.
That's exactly right. It doesn't have significance in and of itself. Now, a lot of movies are treating it, it actually is a thing. It is a widget that is important beyond just that. So, the thing, my problem with the Magic Box, and I'm being a little mean-spirited here, I don't mean to be, but here's why I have a problem with it from a storytelling standpoint, is because it's pretending to take a risk, but not actually taking a risk. Because here's the thing, if you present a concept, you know, like a Magic Box idea, and you don't deliver on that, for me, what you're saying, what you're telegraphing to me is that I'm afraid to actually have an idea for fear it's being laughed out of the movie theater, that it's ridiculous or embarrassing or just lame or whatever. If you never deliver on that, you never set yourself up for that. The problem is that you never finish your sentence. And for me, that's chickening out.
It is, know? A little chicken shit.
And I would rather somebody come down and say, it's ta-da, and stick the landing and have me go, all right. But I would at least have respect that they stuck the landing after they did the triple backflip or whatever. Right now, they're doing the triple backflip and just hanging in the air. And we all like, that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. How does it land? You know?
At least Shyamalan tries to land it.
Right.
As unsatisfying as it is most of the time.
Right.
He has his mystery box, but then he tries to put it all together at the end.
That's right. And that's
you get what you get.
And that's commendable. And I guess it's...
In a way, yes. Very.
It's also, weirdly, it's This is maybe oversimplifying. In fact, it is. So I'm going to say that before I say this. But it is, you're almost sort of telling an audience your storytelling intelligence, in a way, you know. And if you keep it a mystery, you never really tell them what you got or what you don't got.
Yeah, but
you know?
But I think I heard this from Lindelof at some point that he thinks the questions are more interesting or more important than the answers.
I disagree, because I don't go to a movie for questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a Socratic method. That's how you learn, you know, by the question, asking questions and stuff. I go to a movie because I want to see a point of view that may be different than my own, you know,
right.
And I want to maybe disagree with their point of view, which we'll get into with Tomorrowland, potentially the point of it is. But part of the charge for me in art, which is what this is that it does have a point. The author is trying to make a statement, you know?
And it doesn't have to be a political statement.
Not at all.
Or...
Not at all. It could just be an observation about what it's like to be alive. That's plenty.
Yeah, that's,
you know?
Truth.
That's, totally.
That's telling the truth in storytelling.
And even if it's like sort of misses the mark or whatever, you know, or if it's even sort of superficial, like it's sort of like a, you know, a big comic book movie or whatever, at least just stick the landing,
right.
You know? And I feel like Joss sticks the landing. You know, is it amazing? Not really, but the ride is fun.
Yeah, but he doesn't like try to.
He doesn't
bury the lead the entire
you're
movie.
Right.
Where you're like, okay, Joss, where are you taking me? What
that's
is this? I see the Avengers
right.
are doing stuff, but no one's telling me what.
That's true.
What they're doing, I don't understand. They're going somewhere, but
that's
Joss.
Right.
What is this movie about?
And Joss really seems to value the ride,
yeah.
You know, in a way where it's like it's not all resting on what's in the box.
Look,
you know,
I think it's great to have a movie with a sense of mystery.
But you got to pay it off.
You got to pay it off. But I mean, even something as small as the beginning of Star Wars, you know, Star Wars did have a sense of mystery.
Yep.
You didn't know all the pieces when it started. You had these droids. You had some sort of battle going on. You had whispers of a rebellion. Then you're on this desert planet and the droids and you're like, what the hell's going on?
Right.
And then finally, Luke, he stumbles upon this message. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Star Wars, he stumbles upon Princess Leia's message and he's intrigued,
right?
We know he yearns for something better, for something more. And here he sees this mystery that seems like it's the answer to his own yearning.
And it's exotic. She's
beautiful.
Another
she needs
world.
Help.
Right. She's a princess.
She's got this important information, and he wants to go to there. It's like
right.
it's like the gal at the beginning of Tomorrowland. Touching the pin, that's like how I felt watching the trailer. That's how Luke felt when he saw Princess Leia. You want to go to there. I want that experience. I want to be transported out of my life into this amazing other thing. And that's what I wanted when I went into Tomorrowland.
Same here.
I wanted to be transported to this other thing. And I got to see the main character when she touched the pin and what she saw which was a sort of a really very well designed and realized version of going into Epcot Center or something. You know what I mean? Like it was a really...
For me, but I felt like you touch the pin and you go look at a bunch of map paintings.
Yeah.
You know, you don't actually get to go. Like, you know, even the Wizard of Oz, you see, you know, the Emerald City from the distance, and the next thing you know, they're in there. Yeah. You know, and they're getting baths and getting their hair did. And,
well,
you
they
know,
never
like,
had to build that stuff because in the end, nothing ever really happened in Tomorrowland.
That's right.
And by the way, okay, I just need to say this.
I've been restraining this.
Okay. For those of you who haven't seen Tomorrowland, let's just quickly sum up what the story is. Okay, so we've got this gal, present day. She's got some anti-government sentiments. She's
going to blow up NASA.
She wants to keep Cape Canaveral from being torn down, so she's sabotaging all their equipment, so she's anti-government. And so this young gal from Tomorrowland, which is presumably the future, she's a robot. She tucks a little magic pin into her pocket, and when she finds the pin, she touches it, and it instantly transports her, or seems to transport her, to the future where Tomorrowland is. And every time she touches it, she gets to see more until, I guess, the batteries run out and she can't use it anymore. But she's so intrigued, she needs to find out what this place is. And then when she takes the pin in, she sees on eBay someone's looking for them. She brings it into the shop. Turns out the shopkeepers are robots. And
which was very Men in Black.
And they're trying to kill her. And then the robot little girl shows up and saves her. And then they're running off to adventure. And most of the movie takes place present day as they're racing to get to Tomorrowland.
Right. There's a lot of getting to Tomorrowland.
It's an hour and a half of getting to Tomorrowland, yeah. Right. By the way. So that's two-thirds of your movie getting to Tomorrowland. And then they get there, and it turns out that, well, you know, Hugh Laurie is Governor Nix. He's sort of the soft bad guy. He's kind of a good guy who maybe has a bad attitude. I don't know. He's just a bad guy. And in the course of the next 10 minutes or 5 minutes, they somehow explain everything that you've been wondering the whole movie. Like, what is this about? What is Tomorrowland? What the hell is going on? What is the story? And so it all gets puked out in about 10 minutes. And you're like, and then as you're scratching your head trying to make sense of it, a battle happens. It's like, oh, but now there's a battle and fistfights and robots and there's a portal and there's a bomb.
Was that the whole beach thing?
Yeah, that whole thing. It was just a melee that seemed to be designed to sort of take the place of meaningful action and also make you forget that it doesn't make any effing sense.
Right.
And then it's over. And I rewatched the third act today and I'm like, it doesn't make any more sense. But here's a question I have for you as other viewers. What is your impression of where Tomorrowland is? Where or when?
I thought it was essentially a parallel hidden pocket universe kind of thing where they can, it's always there. And all the people who have been invited, all the cool kids get to go live there instead of the real world.
Is it present day? Is it future?
I thought it was present day. I thought it was sort of just like, a pocket outside of time or something.
I thought it was like a multiverse thing, like a parallel universe, basically.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was the future. And maybe it was my bad that I missed the parallel universe thing, but it's called Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Right.
And the images are of this futuristic city. I mean, why would you not think that it was the future?
Right. I don't know if it matters or not, actually.
I don't think it does. Well, and, you know, they never clarify it.
No.
Well, they never clarify it.
And, I don't know why I'm fighting this argument, but maybe Tomorrowland, conceptually, it's like people who are interested in the advancements of tomorrow, i.e. the scientists and the artists and the important people of the universe.
Yeah,
you know?
If you explain it, then I can understand it.
Right.
But it's like watching a movie called Ketchup, and the whole time you're seeing them how they make ketchup, and then in the end someone says, no, they were actually making marmalade.
Right.
You're like, well, why'd they call it ketchup? Why'd they call it? And if it's marmalade, why didn't they tell me at the beginning that it was marmalade? They never actually said marmalade in the movie.
Marmalade the movie.
Right. If you look close at one of the labels, it was marmalade. Oh, okay.
Oh, well, at least the explanations were very preachy and messagey and total downers.
So let's talk about that a minute, because I read a blog post or review or something like that, and I hadn't quite gelled my opinion, but it was weird. Like, I had a weird reaction to it.
To the movie or the blog post?
The movie, and then the blog post sort of crystallizes, like, that's it, that's the thing. And it's this weird idea of artist exceptionalism or you know, the man's trying to keep us down. The world would be amazing if the man wasn't keeping us down. And we really are special people. Only a handful of us are. It's a midichlorian to be nerd on this. It's like some of us have the midichlorians. The others are losers. Yeah. You know, like that kind of bullshit rubs me the wrong
way.
But,
you know, if you look at Brad Bird's work, and apparently Lindelof wrote the script with Brad Bird's help. But I think he did the lion's share of the work of actually writing. It was based on a concept that Brad Bird had that they developed together.
Which, okay.
So it was Bird's original concept to develop like a Disney style, like take something that Walt Disney, like Epcot Center, would have liked and, you know, make it into movie reality. And if you look at Brad Bird's work, it's all about there's the exceptional special people and right. then there's everyone else. Yep. And there's also sort of a strange, it's sort of an undertone, which I never really noticed until now. But there's an undertone of sort of anti-establishment in his work as well.
But weirdly, you know, so the idea of Tomorrowland, it's like a weird Ayn Randian utopic kind of bizarreness. I'm like, that's a fascist idea of a future, you know?
Well, it's
like
totally it's binary.
It is. And it's like we're all unique as long as we wear the same thing,
but
you know?
But like it's evident in The Incredibles. Okay, you've got The Incredibles. There's a whole you know, upper echelon of superheroes that are amazing, right? You've got superheroes everywhere, and they're awesome. Of course, not everyone's a superhero, just the superheroes.
Right.
They're super. And what are they shut down by? The bureaucracy, by lawsuits and the government. And they have to go into hiding. They have to go into witness protection. And the son, Dax or whatever his name is.
Right, I know. You know, right,
the kid.
Right.
He basically, you know, he was saying something about being special, and his mom says, "Everybody's special, Dax." And he's like, "Well, it's just another way of saying nobody is." And I really think that's Brad Bird's voice right there.
I totally agree with you.
But I think that's a childlike wonder appeal thing, right? Where as a kid, you want to know why all this young adult stuff is also taking off. You want to be the chosen one or whatever. What was a little bit different about Tomorrowland, I think the lead girl didn't. She wasn't really asking for it. She just kind of stumbled into all of it, but it was right in her personality. But I don't think she had a need. I don't know.
She also had nothing. Tried. She also had nothing that made her special. I mean, above and beyond what makes each of us special, we're all special people, and that's wonderful. But they kept hammering throughout the entire movie, "She's special. She's special. Why me? You're special." It was never ending.
I think and just her rebellious attitude.
What? There was nothing. There was nothing.
You know
the closest that you could pull out of that movie, and in terms of what was actually in the movie, was that she had the little robot girl when she was asking her in the car. By the way, this was the never ending struggle in that movie was to get a question answered about what was going on in the movie. It was
to the point I was like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, I was watching it with my wife, and she was like, "Ugh!" Like, she's like, "I've been in relationships like this where the guy just like as soon as you're starting to lose interest because he's not showing up or whatever, as soon as you're about to leave him, he like calls and says, 'Let's have dinner,' and takes you out. Like, it's just giving you just enough crumbs,
you know,
to keep you on the hook, but not actually giving you anything."
Right.
It's reminding me of some. Really lazy sci-fi picture scripts where the reporter is like, I'm investigating some kind of thing that's going down, and obviously there's something bad happening, and some crazy scientists are meddling with something that they shouldn't be, and something goes haywire. At that point, the reporter should either be dead or on the news, and that's the end of that reporter's story.
Right.
But no, for some reason, that same reporter goes along with the whole movie into the next thing, and now suddenly they're on fighter jets and they're in airplanes, but now they're in space.
You know, the difference
because
is,
they're a reporter.
The difference is that person is serving the function that they're serving is
their
to be
exposition.
They're the newbie.
Oh, right. The point of view of the audience.
Who is constantly there to service exposition. Well, why are we going here? Because XYZ. So it's all about exposition. Whereas in Lindelof's script, and particularly in Tomorrowland, it's all about burying any information. So you've got there were whole swaths of time in the middle of that movie where it's the girl who's special, who's being taken on this adventure by the little robot girl, and they're just in a truck together, just driving along a highway.
So
what is this about? She's like, why is this happening to me? Because you're special. Okay, yeah, but what about that place I saw? And they actually did this. Lindelof did this, where the little girl's like, if you keep asking me these pointed questions,
I shut down.
And they made it into a little joke. And then right. later when George Clooney shows up, he's like, you told her you had a protocol where you shut down? She's like, she was annoying me. And I'm like, are you fucking serious?
Yeah.
That all those questions that you could have answered. And by the way, it's not a bad thing to let the audience in on what the hell the movie is about.
You know what? Your wife hit it on the head. With Lindelof, there is no there there.
There's no there there.
And I think as long as you keep doling it out, it appears that there's there a there there.
Yeah, because you know? If you actually yeah. show up and are emotionally available, right. then you run the risk of being vulnerable. You know, and well, what if that, it fails?
And how about that's way more mystery. An actual thing is there's a lot more mystery in an actual person opening up because it, I mean, you know, anytime anything keeps opening up, the mystery keeps deepening. But it only doesn't deepen when it's a fraud, a fraud, a fraud, a fraud, a fraud.
But you know what we're ultimately talking about is the attempt to be cool, and being cool in service of not showing anyone your true self
and not getting called out.
Not getting called out, yeah. Because either you're a fraud or you're afraid that you know you're gonna be held accountable or whatever it is. The desire is just to seem cool and to cultivate this mystery and hey
right.
you know, look, and oh, and I'm losing interest, yeah, but how about this thing,
right,
you know,
right.
whatever,
I ride a motorcycle.
Exactly. Did you know I was in jail, you
yeah,
know, whatever,
sweet, with my motorcycle. They sent my motorcycle to jail too.
Oh, don't leave me, I'll shed a tear, I need you,
right.
Oh, you do,
yeah, here,
fuck,
look
you.
Here's
yeah.
my tear.
Right.
I was gonna throw out one other thing. So this idea real quickly on this idea of the one exceptionalism that is running throughout this, you know, that so that's actually the orphan archetype, you know, is like you're special, you're somehow singled out, whatever, you know. And you know, when I think about like Star Wars, Luke Skywalker, what's the first thing we see him doing?
We see him
dirt farming.
Working.
Yeah.
He's fucking hating it. He's
actually,
working.
He's actually moisture farming.
He's moisture farming. He hates it. It's a shitty job. It's hot outside. He'd rather be hanging out with his buddies. That's a guy who could be a hero.
Yeah.
Not the I'm a brilliant programmer or I'm somehow... I mean, there was nothing really special about Luke Skywalker. I mean, he's the guy that works on a farm.
Well, the Force was strong with him.
And because of the midichlorians, we find out later.
That never happened.
Right, but you know what? His uncle and aunt never said the Force is strong with you.
No.
They'd fuck that.
No, he was just a normal kid.
Eat your shit and go work on the robots.
I
want
to go
care.
To Tashi Patient Station
and
pick up some power
shut up,
converters.
You little whining piece of shit, and go fix the robot. And you know what? Here's the problem, is that I feel like that is a hero that has the function of a hero, the chosen one concept, that is not an entitled brat when we first see them. That's the part that drives me crazy.
Well, the girl in Tomorrowland wasn't an entitled brat.
No,
but
you're
there
right.
There was literally nothing special about her.
Well, she was a rebel who would phone home to her dad to let her know that she's okay.
Right. I'm okay. I just blew up NASA, but I'm okay. He's like, oh, you can't do that,
you
daughter.
Kids. I mean,
you kids with your blowing up the NASA.
She was fine and she was charming enough. But even in the end of the movie, like when she's navigating the ball, you know, the Google Street View planetarium thing. And he's like, did you train her on this? I just met her today. She knows how to do things. I'm like, that's such horse shit.
You know what we're leaving out?
Because she's special.
She's pretty.
Well, I guess.
No. She's pretty. That's what makes her special. She's pretty.
Really?
Sure.
Well, I mean.
No, come on. This is Hollywood. That's shorthand for everything.
Yeah, but
you like them. Why?
Even if
because
she wasn't
pretty.
Special, she'd be pretty. Care. I mean, they're not gonna cast a female role unless she's pretty, unless she's some like fat friend.
I mean, I think. Okay, well.
Not that fat can't be pretty.
Literally,
send all of your comments to Ephraim.
But literally, what I thought were trying to convey was that they were clueing or. The good forces within Tomorrowland, who's consists of the robot girl, I guess, thought that she was special because she's trying to preserve the forward-looking nature of humanity, trying to keep NASA going. That's ostensibly what made her special.
She didn't say that. Here's what the little girl said.
Did she say something?
What she said was, she said, why me? You're special. And when she pressed harder, this is the answer that Lindelof gave. Well, there was you blew up this thing or the anti-government thing. You have anti-government sentiments, so that's good. Plus, you scored a 78 on the Heisman-Bozeman
test.
They made up some horseshit tests.
It's a great test.
And it's just shorthand for I don't have anything.
Really quickly, what did you guys score on the Heisman-Bozeman test?
Oh, I did 30.
Did you do a 30? Yeah. Did you study? Did you do one of those courses, online courses?
I actually reprogrammed the test.
Holy
so that it was
shizball.
Yeah. So you could save the ships.
Kobe, what?
One other thing that I was going to throw out, the whole idea of a future, the utopian thing never works because it's always inherently fascist because it's one person's point of view of what the future looks like. So how's that for Mike?
Boom.
That sounds like hate Ashbury bullshit right there. But it really is. I mean, like, here's the future. Oh, everybody raises their hand. Everybody's great. Everybody's happy. It's like, that does not look like a reality to me. And here's the thing is, like, the thing that I think is always missing in utopian projections is it never has punk rock, you know? And I mean the idea that there's always contrarianism. Every society has a contrarian.
Dude, you're forgetting that this worldview is very simple. It's binary.
That's what I mean. That's fascist.
You've got the Imagineers and the tourists.
And everybody else. That's right. The kids, the popular kids, and all the losers that are going to fucking build the cool shit.
And by it's the doers and the takers. And by the way...
That was a thing, wasn't it? The doers and the takers.
Well, that's the whole Ayn Rand sort of, like, if you take Ayn Rand and you extrapolate into sort of an extremist point of view, it's the doers and the takers.
Right.
There's the extraordinary people and then everyone else. And Hugh Laurie talked about everyone else in that 10-minute barf exposition at the end. And basically said, you know, these people are savages. If we let them, you know the truth, blah blah blah. You know, so it's clear that
I like this. Let them know the truth. I love this inherently. We're smarter than everybody else thing too. It's like what we can't tell. It's like you're
That's part of what made him a bad guy.
I need a diagnosis though.
Yes,
because okay, when I saw that this movie was over 2 hours long, that was my first groan. Before I even started.
Right.
It's like, ugh, why? So for some reason, I was along for the ride, as obnoxious as we made it sound, of getting pulled along by the hook.
Oh, it is obnoxious.
All the way until they turned the Eiffel Tower into
a
rocket ship.
Exactly where they lost me.
And then I was just like, I want to go to bed now. I don't care what now.
Because there was no reality. It's like, where are we, you guys? What is the reality here?
Yeah, you know? Instead of bringing me from a present-day reality that I can understand to this other place that's magical, you've just shit all over this present-day reality to the point where I don't even believe it anymore.
Well, and not only that, I was like, if this is some alternate universe, okay. But, like, no, they're like... people next to the Eiffel Tower with their cell phones, you know, like, mm-hmm. like, oh, this is crazy. Look what's going on with the Eiffel Tower. Are you fucking kidding me?
And they're climbing
me?
Into a freaking space shuttle pod
right.
that's going to travel into either forward in time or into another dimension, one way or the other.
Sideways. It's going sideways.
It's doing something it really shouldn't.
Right.
It's taking a piece of paper, putting a pencil. Yeah.
Because the more they can put off getting to what the actual point was.
Right, and there is no point.
And there is no point. There's no story.
And how dissatisfying is it that really the end play is fighting with a robot in a portal? I'm like,
I sat down today to watch the third act again, it was an hour and a half in by the time they finally got to Tomorrowland, and that's where I started. And I'm like, I looked at what was left, and there was still a significant amount left. I'm like, well, maybe there was more sort of meat here at the end than I remembered.
Of course, it's 20 minutes of credits.
And it really wasn't. It was a bunch of crap that was Hugh Laurie said in like 5 minutes, which was completely dissatisfying because it's too little too late. And there's no time to derive any meaning from it. You know, if I knew what the story was and what everyone was going for and what the problems were going in, then I could go along for the ride. And then that third act could have been a shift where meaning took place. That's where they could have landed on meaning. Instead, it's a shitty reveal.
You know what the problem though is? Meaning, you put your ass on the line with meaning.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's where you're earnestly saying life is like this, but instead they're saying this situation is like this.
Yeah. Oh, robot.
Oh yeah. By the way, future
gas bladder.
We can see in the past, and didn't make any effing sense.
So here's the thing I forgot. What? So when they finally got to the Tomorrowland, it was all like disheveled. I don't remember why that was.
They never explained it.
Oh, surely they explained
it
somewhere.
They did not. No. That's what I'm saying. Like, there was all this big chunk of movie left, and I thought, we're going to get it all explained. I just forgot last time. No, they didn't. They got a little bit of exposition, a lot of robot fighting, and then it ended up with Hugh Laurie dead. The robot had gotten shot, the little girl. So now she's like, so this whole long, like 15 minutes is spent on her dying and the relationship between her and George Clooney, which I'm like, this is not what the movie is about, and I don't care. This is like frosting on a cake that is empty.
Right. And it's basically the inversion of AI. It's an older guy and a younger girl, and it was a younger guy and an older, his mother, Here for me is where, like, so proposing an alternate Tomorrowland, what I would have wanted to see. So set up Tomorrowland, it's a real place, whatever the explanation is, it could be a multiverse or what, that's fine. Don't get in the fucking Eiffel Tower to go there, though. Don't rocket ship this shit, you know, do something else. But the thing for me that would have been interesting is Tomorrowland doesn't work, you know, and so use that as a springboard for what actually is a better Tomorrowland.
And also, what if Tomorrowland had worked for a while and you have all these great inventions and all this stuff, and then it started to get subverted, and how all those different things could have been like turned on their heads?
I love it.
You know, it sounds like maybe at some point that was in there.
It kind of, because they set it up.
It got ripped out of the story somehow.
And you know what? I think this was protecting the brand. I think that was the ultimate. Like, no, they can't do that. That's not what Tomorrowland is.
I mean, did they need that girl's anti-disestablishmentarianism to make the future bright again?
Right.
Well, because
exactly,
it's the establishment. It's like, government that's going to, if there's ever going to be a Tomorrowland, there can't be a government.
Yeah. I think I misused that word.
Actually, The actual definition of that is opposed to the withdrawal of the Anglican Church from the 19th century. I actually know that because it was a trivia question when I was in elementary school. You had to spell the word and give the definition, and you got a silver dollar.
So I just want to point out one thing. I was thinking about how binary the thinking is in the world of Tomorrowland, that you've got the doers and the takers. Or the good and the bad.
The smart kids and the dumb kids is what it amounts to.
And then I was thinking about, like, well, you know, how this differed from movies like Star Wars. And then I was thinking, well, Star Wars did have Luke. He was a special person. He did, the Force was strong with him because of his family lineage.
But that, he didn't get the gig because of that.
Well, he did in a sense. I mean, Obi-Wan tapped him to come and
but
be part
didn't
of
know
the journey.
That. But yes,
Obi-Wan knew.
Obi-Wan knew, but Luke was sort of like, "Yeah, cool." And he never commits until he goes back and they've killed his
right,
aunt.
Right. But I'm not saying Luke knew. I'm just saying that he did have he wasn't just anybody.
Right.
He was a guy that had the Force was strong with him. So it was the special people in the world of Star Wars have the Force is strong with them.
Right.
And then there's everyone else. But
which is,
if you look at the world of the original Star Wars, not the prequels, you've got characters like Han, and you've got his buddy.
Chewbacca?
No.
Calrissian?
Lando Calrissian. Thank you. Just spaced on it.
His buddy.
You know, his friend.
Who are not, but equally important to the story.
They are shades of gray.
Right.
They run, they're sort of the counterpoint to the binary nature of the Force, the dark side and the light side. You've got these people who exist somewhere in between, and they teeter on the edge of, are they scoundrel? Are they good? I mean, look how we were introduced to both of those characters.
Right.
I mean, so those universes acknowledge readily that there are many shades of gray, and that people who don't have the Force, whether it be the good side or the bad side, that they're not just shitty people.
Right.
You know what I mean? That the only important people are the Force people and everyone else, whatever.
Right, our leftovers. And you know, the other thing too, is it's like those great people are, like, they're a critical part of the story, of the goal becoming accomplished. I mean, it's Han Solo that shoots Vader into outer space, you know, to give Luke the shot, you know?
Well, look, after a while, I'm no longer I am no longer represented in the story by Luke. He becomes a Jedi by the third movie. Which is the problem. I don't relate, but I relate to Han. I relate to Leia. I relate to Chewbacca.
And that was the same problem with The Matrix. The first one, we're Neo. The second one, I don't know who we are. Because
I think
after
we're one of the Agent Smiths.
Taken for a ride.
Yeah, because once we can fly, we got nothing. You know.
Well, the thing, every once in a while, I see a movie, usually a science fiction, super spectacular effects, blah, blah. And I think, man, this makes me wish this was a totally different movie. Like, I think this would have been cool as a BioShock movie. Just the looks, what the potential is. It gave me a little touchstones into like, well, yeah, we could have done BioShock. And I hope someone pulls off a BioShock script that is as much of a way to blow your mind as playing the game was.
Well, that's the whole Ayn Randian philosophy taken to its extreme and gone wrong.
Right. And that's
delivers on the premise.
Delivers on it. And then, Cloud Atlas made me think that the Gunslinger series should be a movie just because of the desperate sets and how completely lush and realistic all of them looked. But anyways, that's just my aside. I think it's time for a break.
Oh, wait, I'm not quite done.
Okay.
I'm not quite ready for a break. I just want to...
Everyone's like, hey, actually, dude, go for it.
You know, after when you watch Tomorrowland, if you're aware of the sort of the information shell game that's constantly happening,
it pulls you out of it.
It's maddening. It's almost laughably, like if you turn it into a drinking game.
I was going to say,
it would be a scream. Because when they finally get to Tomorrowland, there's a point where they're standing there, they have their standoff, and Governor Nix says something really provocative, some bit of information that you're like, oh, what do you mean by that? And the girl actually says, what do you mean by that? And instead of answering, he's like, and who is this? And it's never brought up again. Right? So that's the kind of bullshit they do constantly redirecting. And after the big reveal, where the reveal, in quotes, when they find out that everything's fucked, she actually says to Clooney, you know, with all the questions I've been asking, you could have told me blankety blankety blank about what's happening. And the girl says, I did sort of hint at it. I'm like, that's Lindelof trying to just shuck and jive.
He's having a conversation with himself.
That's exactly right. Because he knows the audience is shaking with frustration.
You know, so when I think about, real quick, I don't know why everything has to be real quick with me. But
Real quick.
Real quick, but real, real quiet and long and drawn out. So the idea of Hitchcock suspense, the whole the thing with it's a shock when two people are sitting eating dinner and they blow up. It's suspense when you see the bomb under the table and then you see two people casually having dinner because you know you have an omniscient point of view. You now know, oh my God, they don't know this. They don't know. The problem with the Lindelof is like we don't know that there's a bomb under this. If he would set up there's a bomb and then the shuck and jive happened on top of that, now you have something holding up that shuck and jive. It's not just bullshit. It's not a shell game with no pee under any of the shells, you know?
Can you imagine just for a second, like, trying to tell a story in Lindelof style, like the Tomorrowland story around a campfire to a bunch of kids.
Right.
Like they would be so...
So there was kind of a ghost. What kind of ghost? I'll tell you in a second.
Yeah.
But it did this thing. What thing? A thing.
So they're going, they're in the car and they're driving and bad guys are after them. Okay, what bad guys? Just some bad guys. Some bad guys. So they're in the car and they're driving.
But scary bad guys.
Scary bad guys. But they lost them a while back. So they're driving.
Oh, but look... And left turn.
But why? Where are they going? Oh, they're going to another place. Oh, okay. Where are they going? Well,
a spooky place.
Just when the character asks that, they get hit by another car. And
exactly.
Suddenly, you know, it's like
there's no bomb under the table. You know what would have been interesting? And I felt the same way with Castaway. Oddly enough, is that the very first scene in Tomorrowland should be Tomorrowland going to hell because that's the bomb under the table. And then I want to know, oh, awesome. What happened to Tomorrowland? You got me. I'm hooked. I'm in. The same thing with Castaway. Castaway is broken because we never know what's going on with Helen Hunt. If we saw Helen Hunt waiting for him, and at some point making a decision like, I got to move on, and then getting remarried, and you see Tom Hanks still duking it out, you're like, no. You know? Then you have a stake in the game. You don't have any stake in the game when he's talking to a fucking volleyball.
Well,
you know?
it would have also given Zemeckis an opportunity to compress time to say, okay,
that's exactly
6 months later, 5 months later, or a week later. Instead, he was forced to like watch every single step he took.
Right. And I think that was, it was sort of a filmmaker's challenge and an actor's challenge because he lost all the weight and stuff like that. But ultimately for what goal? I don't feel like it helped it dramatically, you know. Mm. But I just think that, like, let me know what the problem with Tomorrowland is. You know, what is the problem with Tomorrowland? And not some bullshit exposition at the 11th hour where I don't care.
If you want to tease me for a few scenes at the beginning to create intrigue and pull me in, fine.
Right.
Cold opens are great for that.
Somebody sabotaging Tomorrowland, or who are these people, or whatever. And the other thing, too, I don't know why this stuck out with me, is just annoying, but when she gets on the tram, I don't know why that was annoying. It looked kind of fake to me, and everybody looked like everybody's super happy. I was like, I don't want to go there, you know? Whatever. That's totally aside.
Should we break and come back and trash Tomorrowland some more?
Sure, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
All right. Be right back.
Well, we're back from our break.
And
we did a quick little look at the movie again that we were talking about.
We just needed a refresher.
Yeah, to clarify some things or make things less clear.
It was like, didn't they tell us what this was about? And we watched a few minutes and it was like, no, they really were just speaking and sort of like, it's the thing. I think she could do it. Do what? The problem.
Me what my favorite color is.
Sean, what's your favorite color?
PJ, what do you think?
Hi, it's nice to meet you.
Bam! We just wrote that script.
Boom. Yeah.
So what else you got? You got some more...
Well, you know, just thinking about the whole mystery box thing, it got me thinking about J.J. J.J. Abrams is a filmmaker who I have a lot of respect for. He's an amazing craftsman, and what he does extraordinarily well.
And by the way, Star Wars is looking on point so far. The trailers are looking pretty exciting.
I'm sure he's going to do something amazing. But he does, you know, he does subscribe to the mystery box approach. He maybe hasn't been quite as offensive about it as Lindelof has with his storytelling. But I was thinking about Super 8 and thinking about how, you know, in Tomorrowland, you had a main character who didn't know what the movie was about most of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, just didn't know what movie they were in.
You're talking about...
In Tomorrowland.
Oh, okay.
Had no idea... Was constantly asking, and of course dealing with things as they came up. Oh, here are some killer robots. Some killer robots who, by the way, I don't know why, even once I've seen the entire movie and got the explanation of what was going on, why there were killer robots.
Because Utopia...
They were murdering policemen.
Right, right. Well, you know, because they're yeah, I don't get it either.
And if there was some compelling reason as to why, like, this young girl robot, or the actual young girl who got the pin, or the pin itself, why these were, like, extraordinarily threatening things to Governor Nix and his power and all of that, that would make some sense to me. But in the end, it did not add up. But that's over here. So you've got this character who really does not know what the hell's going on through most of the movie, is asking questions and not getting answers. Then I was thinking about Super 8, which was written by J.J. and directed by J.J. Because there was an interesting movie. It's a much better film, I think. Much more successful in many ways than Tomorrowland. I enjoyed it far better. But it does suffer from the mystery box. And you've got these kids who are intrigued in the beginning of the movie when the train crash happens while they're making their little vampire movie. Train crash. This is an enormous train crash, and... the main character witnesses something trying to smash its way out of one of the cars, and then the door flies off and he never actually sees what it is, but he was there for that event. And then they see their shop teacher or whatever it is who was there in the truck, and they talk to him for a minute, and you'd think, okay, well, the game's afoot. It's going to be a story about these kids who help this stranded alien get home, when in fact it's not about that at all. It's about these kids who are trying to make a vampire movie. And one of them has a crush on this girl, and he's having issues with his dad. And meanwhile, they have no idea there's an alien in their town the entire movie.
Yep, yeah.
They have no idea.
I don't remember anything about that movie, and that usually tells me something.
Oh my God. Well, it's
been a lot of booze between.
In contrast to E.T., and I bring up E.T. only because it definitely felt like J.J. was channeling Steven Spielberg in Super 8. And so in contrast to E.T., this alien was not, you know, going around putting speaking spells together and doing funny things. He was grabbing people. He was lurking in the shadows, and you'd hear a noise, and someone would come out with their flashlight looking in the bushes, and then all of a sudden they'd be whisked away.
It was the boogeyman.
It was a bit of a boogeyman story. Meanwhile, it seemed like everyone in the town, including the kid's dad, who's like one of the deputies, knows something is up. The kids are clueless. They even took some of the alien cubes from the crash and took them with them. Never really examined them. Never asked, hey, what are these cubes? No one ever talked about the things.
Which is weird because, like, as a viewer, like, what are they? I want to know. Tell me, you know, it's like.
Yeah, but so you've got these kids who are uninvolved in the mystery the entire time until the third act. So, like, 2/3 of the way through the movie, nothing. And then all at once, they get this implausible amount of information all at once. The girl gets kidnapped, and then they suddenly realize something's wrong. They're like, let's go to that teacher's, let's break into the school, go to that teacher's locker where he's got all of our stuff, and they find film and audio tape, which they play them both at the same time, and they happen to sync up and deliver this like shitstorm of exposition that just lays everything out for them, and then it's just a melee from there on out. It's like it's suddenly another movie. And unlike the melee that took place in the third act of Tomorrowland, this one felt a little more satisfying because you had more stuff going on. You had the town under siege with like the military going nuts, and then you had the kids going underground into the tunnels where they found the alien who was eating people.
Delicious.
A lot of people don't realize that alien was eating human beings. It wasn't eating cows. It wasn't eating a big bushel of potatoes or apples. It was eating the dominant intelligent life form on the planet. That's monster territory. That's not E.T. That's not friendly. That's not even like, you know, gray area or whatever, you know, like that's just some bad shit. I don't care if we abused it and then they decide to eat us. He's eating people.
Right.
So you cannot get away with a, you know, the main character saying, hey, bad things happen. And then the alien goes away. Brah. And the alien goes away in this beautiful, like, E.T.-like ending.
No. We just ate all of your village.
You did not earn that moment. It does not fit with this movie.
You know,
and what should have happened, I'm just going to finish this one thought. What should have happened is the kids should have looked at their Super 8 film after that whole train crash. They should have gotten it back from the developers and seen, you know, the creature crawling out of the train car, and then the rest of the movie for them should have been trying to unravel this mystery, finding the thing, figuring out what to do, like, get the kids involved, get us involved.
Right.
That would have been, like it's like Goonies, if the kids are just playing video games all day until the third act, and then they're like, oh, there's a treasure?
Right. That would have been a better movie. You know, I was just thinking about when has the black box been delivered on well? And like for me, a great example is the Force in Star Wars. You know, we hear, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, the whole thing, does the whole sort of the Force, it permeates the thing and blah, blah, you know.
Are you talking prequels or are you?
No, I'm talking about the first one, Star Wars, the I guess episode 4 or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
You know, they're on the Millennium Falcon and he's. You know, they're chilling out and he's doing the laser or, you know, the lightsaber practice thing. And he's describing, you know, putting the helmet on, which is the old blind samurai thing. So that's a nod to old samurai movies. You know, you can do it blind. You just sense it. And that's what the Force is and stuff. And so that's the black box. The Force is the black box. That's the MacGuffin, let's say. Actually, the MacGuffin is Princess Leia. But the way that they pay that off is the end. The only way he's going to hit the target is if he shuts technology down and trusts his intuition, the Force. That pays off the magic box, and it does it brilliantly because it's not separate from the story. It is the culmination of the story. You must use the Force to finish the job, period. That's paying off the magic box, and in a really clearly satisfying way. We're still watching Star Wars movies, so clearly when you pay it off like that, you'll get your just reward in terms of box office and fan base. And
the Force isn't like, it's not a magic amulet. You have to use the magic amulet and then you'll win. It's basically saying you have to use yourself, your own intuition.
Your intuition, right. Exactly.
You have to turn off all the other tools and just trust your gut.
Right. What, and as far as like a movie being about something, that's about something.
Yeah, it is. You know? It's about something that we can all relate to, right, even though none of us have experienced the Force.
Or I don't
maybe
have,
you haven't.
I have a midichlorian, so I see it every day. Great. I mean, I didn't want to be a dick and like be all braggy. And
what
shit,
I like about midichlorians is that it keeps your whites white and your darks dark.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
No matter what temperature, you wash it.
Exactly. It washes out wine stains and blood stains. And
you can wipe them out with antibiotics, too.
Yeah. It's not bad.
If you're just sick of the Force.
Yeah. Yeah, you just take a dose of midichlorians twice a day. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
Off the chuck. So anything more on Tomorrowland?
I just want to say that you are special.
I feel special, and let me tell you why I feel special. Because part of me feels like I was destined for greatness.
You were the chosen
and
one.
I'm just going to cut you off real quick. I don't feel like I'm going to have to earn that. I feel like some magical thing's going to happen because I'm good, and I'm inherently better than you, of course.
I'm telling you, you're magical. I'm telling you, you're the chosen one.
Okay, but you don't have to tell me because I know.
Oh, I see.
You see what I mean? Because I'm special.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I might not remember because I'm an orphan and I have a baseball cap. Do you see what I'm saying?
You scored very high on the midichlorian
test.
The YouTube Facebook test.
I'm a bad guy just because I'm all disillusioned.
Exactly right. Yeah, you second guess yourself. Yeah,
he's disillusioned. He was disillusioned.
You're exiled.
It's like I tried to save people and they didn't want to be saved. Right. So
do you know what?
Really explain it beyond that.
In all fairness, first of all, he's been working as a doctor a long time. He has a limp. He's uncomfortable. He's been dying for a long time.
He's a grouchy dude.
So of course he's going to take Tomorrowland and kind of be a dick about it.
You know, he's got a big heart.
He does have a big heart and a house. It's a Hugh Laurie joke.
Yeah.
House.
Yeah.
Bridge.
Good.
Oh, by the way.
Which accent is his real one? Oh, my God.
Yes, all of them. But by the way, we were talking about this when we were playing the video back. But you know how we know he's evil?
He's British.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
But the little robot girl is British, too.
Yep.
Also evil. Robot. She's a robot.
I gotta tell you, the epilogue of this movie, once they've saved Tomorrowland from the evil, just sort of grumpy Governor Nix.
He's just grumpy
cat with an army of killer robots. That's right. The only thing that makes him evil. He's just like, set the killer robots on them. So they get rid of him, they save Tomorrowland, and suddenly I guess all these robots come walking out and be like, hey, we're ready to repopulate Tomorrowland.
Right. With this multicultural group that looks entirely the same.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're getting ready to send them out on a mission that is so vague as to be absurd.
To make things better. I don't understand what you don't understand about making things
special
better.
Special people to make things better.
Right, because they know better. Because they know.
That's what we do here. And one of the robots raises his hand and says, excuse me, Mr. Clooney,
Does he actually say Mr. Clooney?
No. Okay. He says, your search parameters, although mathematically accurate, are very vague. I'm like, if it's mathematically
mutually exclusive, yeah.
Right? And then he says, can you be more specific? And I'm like, that's what I've been saying this whole goddamn movie! And no, you cannot be more specific because there's no there.
Right.
And what's the answer to the question? He looks at the
another
girl.
Question.
He says, well, what do you think? And she says, find some special people, the ones who are feeding the right wolf. Which I'm sure those robots are like, check.
Yeah, got it.
thanks for clearing that up.
Awesome. So now we have a metaphor.
Right.
You know what this movie is, to me, what this movie is about? American know-how. Good old-fashioned American know-how.
GE.
Hey, it makes not as much.
Bring good things to living.
It makes less sense than GE's commercials lately.
Right. Actually. Oh, I haven't seen them. Like light bulbs and we blow you up.
They're weird. Yeah, they're
and
weird commercials. It's like, who are these commercials for? And the best I could tell is like to remind people to buy stock in GE maybe.
Yes. Yes. We're still
because
here.
Because it's like we make products, but you're not going to. You don't know what we do.
My favorite is the one
you
really
use your
weird.
Shit. You use our shit all the time.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And the one I like is I don't remember. It's plugging this BASF or something like that. I love their commercials. We don't make anything. We make it better. I love that. I'm going to be that guy in Hollywood. I don't actually make anything. I make your shit better.
Boom.
Wow. Actually, that is the thing.
All right.
So see Tomorrowland. Enjoy it. No, yeah. I actually recommend if anyone's interested. If you enjoy watching films, not only the ones that work, but the ones that don't work so well, in order to see maybe what's broken, this is a fascinating example of a movie that's not working.
And I would say holler if we miss something. We're open.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. I'm holding to my you know.
Yeah, you're opinions. Old and grumpy and inflexible.
But, yeah, right. But PJ, you kids get off my film.
PJ's open. He will flip-flop no matter yeah, right. what, yeah,
I
what don't, you say.
I just don't care about that movie enough. Right, he's...
But go to the 10 Giant Robots page on Facebook and feel free to give us your thoughts there.
Woohoo!
Thank you very much.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
10 Giant Robots is created and distributed by the 10 Giant Robots Radio Network in beautiful downtown Burbank, California. Our theme music was created by the incredibly talented Shane Knight. Follow us on Twitter at 10 Giant Robots or at 10giantrobots.com.